Accession number 31415.
Real two. Now, where did you go after Broughton then?
Well, we went from Broughton to Ryer, to my auntie Nora's. Now, it was all right when we first got there, but my auntie Nora had twin daughters, Jean and Edna. I don't know how they are, I haven't seen them for years. And she also had my cousin was called Edward, and he was a bit of a know-all. And I couldn't get on with him ever. In fact, I'll give him a bloody good hiding. Because he thought he was the cat's whiskers, and I got stuck in. But my two cousins, who were a lot older than us, my twin cousins, Jean and Edna, they were lovely girls. They were fantastic. And they used to look after me and my sister, and my Aunt Nora was a lovely girl. There was only one thing that I had against, not against her, but that was her. As a child, I couldn't understand why. But my Aunt Nora was very religious. And we had to go to church three times a day on a Sunday and twice in the week of an evening. And I used to go with my two cousins, my two elder cousins, when they came. They were at work in those days. They were working. And we used to go to the top of Ryop to this church. I can never remember the name of it. It was a Baptist church, I think. Anyway, and the school was at the top, just by the church, this school. That was quite a good school. Quite a good school. Similar to the one at Broughton, but it was quite a good school.
Did you fit in there?
Yeah, we did. We did. We got on quite well. In fact, we had quite a happy, apart from my cousin, Edward, we enjoyed ourselves. Because you could see the sea from our, come to the doorstep, and come out to the gate, and you saw it was a distance of about half a mile. It looked it like that to me as a child, but it could be more. It might have been a mile and a half. There was the North Sea. We had a beautiful view of the North Sea. Now, funny enough, you had all that view and all that, but we never see any warships or anything like that to shell us. We never got anything from the German Navy. And yet we was overlooking the open sea. It was strange.
Was there any bombing in the area? Because there were bombing around Sunderland.
Yeah, there was. Sunderland got bombed. The docks. Well, this is what we couldn't make out, you see, because the bombers came to the docks, but never any warships, which was strange when we were kids. We used to talk about things like that. You know, the bombing. They used to bomb the Sunderland. And, of course, when we used to go into Sunderland, it was the first time I'd ever seen this. Was an experience for me as a child. There used to be trams, and they used to go into the town by bus, and they used to go on a tram, and you could go to Roker Park from the town centre, a place called Park Lane it was called, to Roker Park, to the football pitch, Sunderland Football Ground. I never went, but the trams used to go, and it used to cost you a halfpenny on the tram. And the first time I ever saw on the tram, kids running about Sunderland, even in the winter, with no shoes and socks on. Now, that's what you call poverty. And I never experienced that in my life. Never in the East End of London did I ever see children with no shoes and socks on. But when I was in Sunderland, that was poverty. And yet Sunderland was quite a nice place, and the people were wonderful people.
So how long did you stay there for? Or anything happened while you were there?
Not really. No, we just had a normal everyday life. And it went on, and my aunt Nora was another, like my mother, my aunt. She was a girl from in service. She was in service at the same time, around the same time as my mother. She was younger than my mother. And she was a beautiful woman. She never let religious interfere with our lives, but she was very, very religious. But she was a lovely woman. Yeah, she was a beautiful woman. She took care of us. My two cousins did. They were wonderful girls. And we got on very, very well. We got on. And my Uncle Tom, my Auntie Nora's husband, he was a miner. He never had to go in the armed forces. He was a coal miner. And we did have a happy life there. And then we moved back to, we went from there, after we was there for a period of time.
How long? About 42 to when?
About that time, I suppose. About 6 months, we've 3 to 6 months. We've
so into 43 then, probably.
Going up that way. And then we went back to my... my grandfather and grandmother at Hetton. And we was there, we'd been there a bit, and I went back to Hetton Lions School. I was at the senior school then, and I always remember the name of that one. Well, I used to have to walk all the way to Easington Lane for that, to Hetton Lions. And I used to walk down the old Hetton Colliery railway lines. Hetton Colliery had been closed for years.
So that means you were over 11, so it must be 43.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I was 11. And we used to walk to school all the way to Easington Lane from Hetton, and that was some walk. We used to walk along the old coal line. They still used the railway line as a goods line for coal trucks. But Hetton Colliery was shut. It was a shut-down colliery. It had been worked out, you know? And the nearest one to that, and the line went round to Easington Colliery, where my uncle went back to work after the war. Anyway, I was at that school at Hetton. That was a good school. Smashing school. And we had a great time there. I had a great time there and played for the football team in my class. And, you know, we had a great time. And I had great friends. I made friends with loads of fellas, lads. And we did. We had a great time as kids around that age. And then I started going, when we used to come home from school, I started going. I didn't want to go up first, but my grandmother and grandmother and father and a fella, a boy from school made me come. He said, I go. He said, it's great. He said, you'll be with all the girls. I said, well, I know all that. I was only 11. Anyway, I went country dancing and old time dancing. And the old time, I didn't go much on the country dancing. But when I got into old time, oh, that was fantastic. I never realised that until I've seen it with grown ups in nowadays, when you see it in period films. But that's what I used to do. All this old time dancing with the hands in the air, you know, and swing them round and all. Beautiful, it is, it's beautiful. And old time waltzing. Oh, that was fantastic. And I loved it. Really did.
Did you go to classes or just to dances?
No, just to dances. And you learnt it. You learnt it from the other kids, because the other kids, you never went to classes, no. The other kids taught you as you went along, you know what I mean? And, of course, you used to have, it was like Saturdays and one night in the week, and Saturday night you'd go to these dances. These are
now, what were the dances like? Were they dance halls or just...
Just in ordinary halls, you know, church halls and different places. Mostly church halls, you know. And it was great. And, of course, you used to have a drink at the night time. We should take some money with us. Probably a shilling or something like that, to buy some biscuits or a bun or something with a soft drink, you know. And it was a Saturday night out for you, you know what I mean?
Now, how was your sport going? I mean,
it was all right.
What was your main sport? I mean, you played for the school, did you?
Not the main school, for the class. I played for my class. I'm never that good. It's never that good. You know, never that good. And I just loved it, and I loved a bit of boxing. I did like a bit of boxing. I didn't like getting the punch in the nose, but I did like a bit of boxing.
Was it at a club or at the school?
In a club. I used to go to a club.
What club was that?
The boys' club in the Hetton. Hettonley Hole. And, the boys' club at Hetton I used to go.
And what else did they offer there?
Oh, there was all sorts you could do. You could do cricket. I was never into cricket. Never have been into cricket. And a bit of football, and I was never into rounders, although you had to do it, whether you liked it or not. Can I stop? I want to go upstairs. That's it. I used to
just boxing?
Yeah.
And was it competitive, or was it just for a bit of fun?
No, it's you could go in for it. It was optional. I just used to go in for it for something to do, and just to learn how to look after yourself. You know what I mean?
Now, how long were you at Hetton the Hole for the second time then?
Well, we weren't there long. I think we came home about... it'd be 19... At least 1943. The end of 43. Something like that. It must have been that, because we... Yeah, we was home. I was home, yeah, because I went to Highlands Boys' School.
So you came back to Hornchurch?
Yeah, yeah. Came back to Hornchurch, back to Bush Elms Road. And I went back, and I went to school, to my new school, which was at the top of... Park Lane School was at the bottom of Malvern Road and Clifton Road. And Highlands was at the top, near Globe Road, so I didn't have to walk down the road. And it was a boys' school. And our headmaster was another First World War veteran, but he was on the opposite side.
He was German?
Yeah. But he came up, he was a prisoner of war, apparently. His name was Mr. Muckley. And what I can make out, he was a prisoner of war and he never went home. He never went back to Germany. He was frowned upon, I suppose, but I don't know how he got on, but anyway... He met and married a local girl in his in the early years, you know. And they had a family. And he was a very, very strict man. Very, very strict, Mr. Muckley. But he was fair. And the one thing I liked about Mr. Muckley was he'd do twice a week. He would do a class and he would come and take a class. And what he used to do was... read you certain classical books. And the first time I ever heard the story was, and I've always been in love with that story, and I've got it on tape now, Tom Sawyer. Now, he read Tom Sawyer out of a little green book like that. And he used to do it in he used to do a half hour, then go on to another book. But the one that's always stuck in my head is Tom Sawyer. And he could read it, and you could imagine yourself being there. That's the sort of a head teacher he was, you know, a marvellous man. And they were nearly all male teachers. They were all coming back from the war at the time. A lot of them had been wounded and they were carrying on their professions. We only ever had two lady teachers there. The music teacher was Miss Arthur. She was a fantastic woman. We had a school orchestra. And all violins. I never was into that. But she taught these lads and they were magnificent. They were magnificent. You know, just ordinary boys. Teach them the violin and the oboe and the, you know, the viola and all. And Mrs. Jackson was another one. She was an English teacher. She was very good. I got on with her because she used to do all my corrections when I was doing compositions and different things like that. And I remember them all. Mr. Watson, Soapy. He was an art teacher. And he was a damn good artist. And he had time for it. And he used to have a long pole. And he used to be at the front of the class. He used to have this long pole. And if he saw you talking at the back of the class, this damn pole used to come over the top of everybody else and clay on. And he'd come round and box you from the ears. I mean, you know. But he was they all had character. The teachers at this school. And Mr. Draper was my actual school teacher because I only ended up in 3C. 3C I was in. But Mr. Draper was a fantastic man, well-built man. Served in the First World War, and he served in the Royal Tank Corps. He was in it, the original Tank Corps. He volunteered to go into tanks. And I always liked him when he used to talk about the old little Willie and different things like that. And he used to talk about his time in the First World War. And he was a very pleasant man and all. He was a marvellous man. And he had time for you, you know what I mean? And he used to tell you all the stories and different things about what happened in his life. He was quite like a father. Marvellous man. And then when I left school,
Now, hang on, that's a bit later, because that would be after the war finished, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I left in 1946.
That's it, so hang on a bit. So what about when he got back? Would the bombing wouldn't have stopped in 1943?
No, it was going on. Yeah, and then the doodlebugs started.
That's the V1s.
Yeah, the V1s.
Now, what were they like?
Oh, they were funny. They used to make this horrendous noise. And it used to go over and excuse the language, but his arse was on fire. And it used to be sitting on the tail. The engine used to sit on the tail. And it used to come over. And you see the flames coming out of the tail. And we used to stand and watch it. And all of a sudden, as soon as you saw the flame stop, you'd stand there and you'd go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And duck on the fly. The bloody thing had come down. You see it coming down. But they never flew very high. They didn't fly right up high in the sky like a little dot. They didn't fly very high. They flew very low. Can you take it from me? We used to watch them.
And did any land on Hornchurch?
Yeah, we had quite a few in different areas. All round us we had them. And then came the V2s.
Now, what were they like?
Well, you never saw them, you never heard them, because they were the start of nuclear war, really. And the nearest one that landed to us was in Rockingham Avenue. And it landed, believe it or not, on one of our school teachers' houses, and she was in the kitchen getting lunch, one Sunday lunchtime, when it came down. And the noise was horrendous. The explosion, with the houses all shook. It blew. We had a park between us. It was off of Osborne Road, Rockingham Avenue, because we had the park in between, Highlands Park. So it was quite a gap. But I tell you what, when it landed, and the size of them compared to a doodlebug.
I presume she was killed.
She her husband wasn't there at the time. Half the street was blown away. Half the street, we went round there on the Monday or the Tuesday to see where, because we'd told where it had gone off. And of course, they wouldn't let you down there. The army were stationed all round there at the time.
Now, did you play on bomb site? I mean, people always talk about it. Would you do on a bomb site? Why were they so much fun? Tell us about it.
Well, we used to play soldiers on bomb sites, and you'd be the snipers, and you'd all have your rifles and your tin hats on. And I had my dad's. I had a real army steel helmet on. I had my dad's one. His old, and it had a dent in the top. He had a dent in the top where it'd been hit, you know, with a shrapnel. And we used to play war games, and we used to climb about in the houses. I mean, the things we used to do. I mean, today, if the people today was to see how we performed, they'd die of heart attack.
So what sort of thing were you doing in there?
Well, we were climbing about, climbing up on the roofs. The bloody roofs would fall in. They're blokes that used, kids that used to be taken to hospital where they'd have accidents, you know, on these bomb sites, going up the stairs, and the stairs would give way. Oh, God. And we used to laugh at, and of course, when the stairs used to come down, you used to stand there laughing. You silly son, what are you doing? We can't get up there now. Yeah. And the things you used to get up to, on a thing we used to do and all, we used to get an old pram, or a pram, the chassis to a pram, and go on the bomb sites and bring back all the joists, pull them out of the wood, pull them out.
All the what?
All the joists, the roof joists. And, on the roof, the big thick joists, because they used to, I mean, they don't use what you've got now, thin things, what they use. They were 2x4s and 4x2s and all that. We used to bring them home and used to be in the garden with a saw, sawing them up for the winter, stocking them for fuel, because you never had any fuel. You couldn't get any fuel. We used to go and queue, you know, and we used to nick the doors and all sorts, chop the doors up and make dens out of doors. You had to have a den, didn't you? Used to make dens out of doors in these old bombed out buildings. Used to make these dens. And if they had a Morrison shelter in there, that was better still. Because used to clean all the gear off the Morrison shelter, and it was already made for you, wasn't it? Because the Morrison shelter was a big square thing like a table. Steel box, orange. Remember the colour? Orange. They was in colour. Yeah. And we used to spend hours on bomb sats. Hours. Yeah, enjoy yourself.
Now, do you remember sort of D-Day? Because it was quite busy around Essex on D-Day.
Well, tell you about that, leading up to D-Day.
Tell us about that.
Well, long before that, they brought in, and they brought them into the park about 1943. They took over a lot of houses where they'd all left, big houses all around where we lived, around Harrow Drive, Osborne Road, and all around there. They were, Emerson Park. They were all very, very large houses. And I mean, around Emerson Park, they had butlers and maids and you name it. And they all buggered off to places like Canada and them places, you know, left the houses. So the military, the MOD, took them over. And they billeted soldiers in there. Now, they billeted the Royal Army Service Corps lads in a lot of these around Osborne Road, Arrow Drive, and Grosvenor Drive. And these Royal Army Service Corps, I've got to go back before my dad come out of the army, and he was, before he was waiting for his discharge, he was home on leave from Maidstone. And I told my dad about these blokes and about these coaches, and all these coaches had all their windows knocked out, and they had steel plates put in with round rings with a flap. And that's where they used to have to put their rifles through the squaddies. And they had all these, all painted olive green, like. Fantastic. And they were all on this circle. There's a park on the night time in the park, in this circle. And the guns used to be in the middle, then they put them on the grass. So my dad went round. I said, come and show me where they are, he said to me. So I took him round to this house, the first house in Arrow Drive, where they was. And he walked in, and the first bloke he knew was the bloody cook. And he said, hello, Jack. He said, how you going? Tell me, Dad. God, he said, I never thought I'd see you again. He said, where do you... He said, I only live round the bloody corner. He said, my family live round the corner. He said, what are you doing? He said, I'm waiting for my discharge. He said, I'm on leave waiting for my discharge. So he said, there's lads down the next house. You'll know the crowd down there, he said. So, because he was in the service corps when he got recalled. And he knew them all. He knew them all. The officers and all. He knew them all. They'd survive, like, you know what I mean? Anyway, we lived the life of Riley after that. Because my dad, he got a post in there. They posted in there when he got in touch. And he used to come home with a 1500 weight every night. And then his 1500 weight, he used to wait till it got dark. And he used to lift the flap up. And he used to tell me to come out. Come on, come on. He said, come on. He said, can't go and ask your granddad. And he'd come out and he'd have a box of cardboard boxes. And they'd be on the kitchen table and there'd be a tin of margarine and butter, salted butter, and there'd be bloody corned beef. And he said, now, put these in that bag, you'd say to me, take them round to your granddad. Oh, dear. And we had a fantastic time. And when he got discharged, his mates were still there. And they were there, and what they ended up doing, transporting a lot of blokes, infantry, down to different areas, and were putting up camp tent, you know, tent camps, all over the place. And then on the actual week when it happened, they were moving in. And the actual day, on D-Day, you couldn't see the sky for... It was black, with bombers, and planes towing, and gliders. And we sat in the street, you know? We just sat on the curb, watching them. We couldn't believe, we couldn't understand what was happening. You're only kids, aren't you? We didn't know it was D-Day. We didn't know what it meant anyway. And of course, they were bringing all this stuff down to transport. And over our lodge, there was bloody Yanks and all their gear and guns. And there was everything. There was ducks, what they call ducks on wheels, you know, amphibious craft. And on the actual day, it was absolute bedlam. You couldn't move on the roads. There was trucks and gear on the move, railway lines, you know, loading up the gear. And, of course, we realised afterwards, because my dad come home, we said, well, it started then. So he got the radio on. And then I think it was Richard Dimbleby. I'm not sure which commentator was on the radio. He said, they're going ashore now. They're going ashore now. Yeah. And experiencing it myself, I can imagine what it must have been like. Must have been murder. Murder, wasn't it? Anyway, as I say, at the time we didn't realise these things were going on, and until the radio on the news and all this gear was being moved, and people were, young girls and that, were waving to the squaddies and all that in the backs of the trucks as they were going through. It was complete bedlam. But the aircraft, when they went over, the sky in the daylight, night and day, they were going over, you know, towing gliders. And that was the fantastic thing to watch, gliders being towed behind these planes. Unbelievable. And to think that they were fellow men as well, you know, and the men in the aircraft. And I thought to myself, how the bloody hell are they staying up there, you know? When you think about it, now, right? A lot of them Dakotas only had two engines. They only had two engines, didn't they? And they were pulling as well. Yeah, on D-Day. Oh God, yeah. Never forgot that.
Now, anything else in the rest of the? You know, there's about another year to go to the war. But I mean, what happens for you? Are you still at school?
Yeah, I'm at school. Yeah, I left.
And anything happened during that last year? Before?
No, not really. We had one or two air raids. One or two.
Anything about that?
Nothing much happened. The sirens went off. But what happened, we don't know. There was next to nothing around our area.
What about VE? You're still at school at VE Day then?
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember of VE Day?
Oh, VA Day. On the day, we had a street party.
People now, I mean, they don't really have street parties like that now.
No.
Or they're a bit artificial if they do. What was that street party like? What do you remember of it?
When everybody brought out their furniture. They didn't care what furniture it was. They brought out their chairs, their tables. They lined them all up down the middle of the road. It was all lined down the middle of the road. And all the kids was helping. And they'd bring out their bed linen to put over the tables. And every woman and every person that could cook, bake, whatever they could do, they did. And the spread was absolutely marvellous. And these women, considering the rationing, what they did and what they produced was out of this world. The table was absolutely packed with stuff. You know, the tables, they joined them all up in one long table. I got photographs somewhere of our street party.
And was everyone there? What was everyone
doing? In the street that was in our street was there. Oh, we put a stage up in Mr. and Mrs. Ball's garden because they had rather a large garden. And it come right to the front of the house and to the back of the house. It was a large garden, and he used to be a bit of a market gardener. And we used to go over there and buy. He used to sell it, old Mr. Bull. And he put a stage up. We got a Morrison shelter out one of the houses. And they made a stage and put curtains up with poles. And we had a concert. They got a piano up there on the piano. And they were singing and dancing in the street. And we had a bloody great bonfire. And the paint, we had this bonfire at the top of our road, and they had one down the bottom end of the road, and had this in the middle of the street. They took all the fence posts, what was left, the wooden fence posts out of the gardens. We had fire, and all the paint blistered on the houses, and they was all panicking. And the Mr. Oxley, where the fire was, he had his stirrup pump, and he was rinsing his house down to keep the paintwork from blistering. And yeah, all the paintwork was blistering, and after the fire, there was a bloody great hole in the road where all the tarmac had burnt.
What about, were people drinking?
Yeah. They had barrels, what called firkins. We used to have firkins and had them on a table. And that was on the table, was on the pavement. This table was on the pavement. And about three different barrels. Three different barrels of beer. And then they had other ones. We used to buy the firkins. They're about that big, you know. You get a few pints out of them, and then they had some barrels behind, and bottles, crates with the bottles of beer, in the box rooms in the houses. Old Mr. Newman, in their box room, it was from the floor, it had a floor never give way, it was from floor to ceiling, packed with brown ale, light ale, and they weren't in half-pint bottles, they were in quarts, you know, four in a crate, quart bottles, everybody was on the burst.